Allora. Sono adesso sto introduction and then discussing homogeneous physical equations. Can we then provide?
Do you have the microphone? Yes.
The age problem and structure formation can divide model equation cosmological data in terms of examining homogeneous solutions and conclusions. I have to prepare this talk. I felt confused and overwhelmed. So I apologize for being confused and overwhelmed with this subject. All right, the standard model is based on Einstein's gravitational theory and the cosmological principle. There is no special place in the universe. The universe is isotropic and homogeneous. As first assumed by Einstein in his paper of 1917, which is the beginning of modern cosmology. The assumptions of an isotropic and homogeneous universe were used to develop the lemmas of Friedmann-Lorentz and Hooker, LFRW expanding universe model, which forms the basis of the standard modern CDM cosmology. I don't like this word standard. As a standard particle physics model, as a standard cosmology model. It has all sorts of implications, as you can see, which I don't necessarily agree with. Anyway. So, the standard line of CDM cosmology. By the way, before I continue, here's a photograph of dark matter and dark energy. So,
which one's which?
You've seen it. So the ingredients, as we all know, are general relativity, large-scale homogeneity, and isotropy, 5% baryons and electrons, all the matter which I'm made of, 25% dark matter, 70% dark energy, and a uniform CMB radiation, 2.73 degrees approximately, and that's a scale-free beta-gravitational fluctuations of order 10 to the minus 5. So this is the pi, and the neutrinos, which we know is dark matter with effect effective, is about 0.1 to 5% of the total. So the in 1998, Nature threw a curve of all matters, to use cricket or baseball language, and we have the accelerated expansion of the universe, supposedly, from the supernova data. And this is the standard result from the standard model. And it suggests that we have cosmological constant, lambda 9.7%. And we have a matter density of 9.3, which consists of 5% baryons, the rest is cold dark matter. Now, although this model has successfully described the available cosmological observations, in particular WMAP CMB data of maximal symmetry, the LFR W geometry of spacetime, and the GI's correct theory of gravity to describe the large-scale structure of the universe. These are the assumptions that go into the model. However, the following points apply. A disturbing feature is that 96% of matter and energy is invisible. This is very bizarre, at least it is to me.
Can we pause on that? Because we have a you agree with the standard model of particle physics that you mentioned before.
So for the most part, which part?
the parts that have been observationally confirmed. We're going to drop the Higgs for now.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that. Yeah. But it looks like it works very well.
Right. So there's visibility consists of one of the four forces.
So I have the thing that disturbs me, and maybe some people, and maybe not other people, is that we can't detect dark energy. We haven't detected the dark matter.
Right.
We only infer these ingredients from gravity.
Right. We have only gravitational evidence. But we also only can see with, we only have two long range forces, gravity. And so is it really surprising that, are you asserting as a principle that everything should couple to both electromagnetism and gravity?
I'm not asserting anything.
You're asserting that it seems odd. Yeah. So that's a sort of principle.
Disturbing to some people.
But that's starting with the assumption that everything
becomes a sociological, psychological problem until you detect something.
But we have detected it through gravitational force has detected something.
We haven't detected dark matter particles in the lab.
Right.
Despite the billions of dollars being spent on it. Well, but we cannot detect dark energy if it's a vacuum energy.
But you could argue that it would be odd that it only coupled strongly to gravity and not correct. I mean, it's even why 96%. It's just a matter of taking.
Well, I mean, but it might. But I guess I just wanted to raise the point that it may be a business. I mean, we just look out and find out what happens. Right? I mean, it seems odd because we're macroscopic beings. We've gotten good at detecting a certain class of particle.
I think there is no objective way of arguing whether something is disturbing or not.
But that's my concern, is that if it's a motivation for a line of research that this seems disturbing, that's fine, but it's not a scientific principle. So I guess it would be my statement.
Well, it becomes a matter of belief. When it comes down to that.
Yeah, obviously, I know
that you're agnostic.
I know you're going to get onto the data tests. So yeah. I look for it.
I'm agnostic until someone tells me that something has been experimentally observed in the lab, maybe, or some other way. Anyway, so as mentioned, we looked for this ubiquitous dark matter, and as of today, no one has observed dark matter particles in a laboratory. And hopefully, we may make progress with this from the LHC, which is starting up again at the end of this month. We know of the existence of dark matter as inferred through gravitational observations, such as galaxy rotation.
Just quickly, in terms of the LHC, you're hoping that we see supersymmetry, or that we see missing energy?
We see the neutralino. Some particle that can be identified, a neutral particle can be identified with dark matter particles.
So any new particle will do
it. It's a stable particle, and we have to, once you see it within the lab, it's an experimental accelerator, you then have to prove that it works in astrophysics. There are two parts to this problem. And you have to show that this dark matter, so-called dark matter particles, is stable and can explain the halos of galaxies, etc., etc.
Okay.
Now, the dark energy, so-called, is a mysterious and undetectable uniform substance that could identify the negative pressure vacuum energy, so-called cosmological constant. This interpretation falls prey to a serious lack of understanding of vacuum density in quantum field theory, and as we know, at least at the cost of degrees in fine-tuning, the degree of the observed vacuum density is so-called cosmological constant. And we talk about numbers like 10 to the 50 from the Higgs particle if it exists, can be calculated vacuum density, a spontaneous symmetry breaking, you get something like 10 to the power 56 times bigger than the Coulomb's observed vacuum density. And if I any energy scale, part of the physics is raised to the fourth power, and you get these preposterous numbers. The Planck energy gives you 10 to 120 times the observed vacuum density, which is always cited to be one of the worst predictions in science. By the way, historically, all influential physicists of the 19th century believed in the ether, including Albert Wacker. And in spite of the because of all experiment in 1879, we still believe that it exists because electromagnetic waves have to have a medium which they can pass through, stabilize. So, indeed, evidently in 1903, when Marconi sent his signal across the Atlantic, Lord Kelvin sent telegrams to colleagues saying, it's finally been proved that the ether exists. So this is, it's 50% dark matter, dark something in history of physics, and 50% that this dark matter turned out to be exist. For example, Neptune was a dark planet. They very predicted where it was, and they found it. Then the anomalous spreading of us Mercury came about through the year, and he postulated another planet, which was a success. It was called Vulcan. It took 67 years to unfold the story of Vulcan, because people kept seeing it and they didn't see it. And it wasn't until Einstein published his modification of Newtonian gravity that they gave up on the Vulcan. So, anyway, so in order to
got a question.
This is a brief comment. I think it's a little exaggeration to say that people are computer cosmological constants.
Sorry, what?
I think it's an exaggeration to say that anyone has actually computed the cosmological constant in quantum field theory. They're just order of magnitude estimates based on a few terms and perturbations.
Yeah.
They might be fairly convincing, but there's
it's
not
probably the most vexing problem in modern physics.
Yeah, you
so
need to go to, I mean, there have been some string theory calculations, but you need some definite framework beyond quantum field theory to compute the
problem. The standard calculation gives you a flat number.
Even if you just had quantum field theory and you put a cutoff somewhere, would you actually say that people have computed it to all, you know, to enough orders and perturbation theory?
Well, in the
people don't even know.
They don't bother, it's too big.
Well, I think
that's the
incentive. Well, there's no particular. There'd have to be a miraculous cancellation.
Yeah,
But no one knows whether there is. That's all.
If you take the Higgs particle to exist as an elementary point, I can, on a piece of paper, within 10 lines, I can calculate the vacuum density due to supersymmetry breakers without using quantum field.
But that's one contribution to it. But no one
that's
knows.
One contribution.
No one knows what the total of all possible.
Well,
but
you have to start canceling things to 56 decimal places. Physicists don't like to do that.
Yeah. So I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying it's not right to say people
estimate.
No,
This
issue of cosmological constant, I gave a talk at the recent workshop from Carol Gill some months ago. And I gave a possible solution to the cosmological constant problem. And so did lots of other people. But we don't know which is the correct one. Each person disagrees with the other person about whether they find a solution or not, including my solution. Okay. This is not a talk about the cosmological constant per se. I'm just mentioning this. Now, Einstein gravity. Well, it works remarkably well in the solar system. For example, if you calculate, use PPM methods, and calculate the angle of the parameter gamma minus 1 is this number. this is something that anybody who does modify gravity has to think that make that number. This is not easy. However, it's not tested outside the solar system, and it's not tested at galaxies, clusters, cosmology, to this extent, in possibly the issue of the mystery of dark matter and dark energy. Without dark matter and dark energy, you cannot fit the data outside the solar system. I've tried it, there's no way you can do it. Now, there's been extensive study of cosmological bias in recent years, and these are the original, this was first published by Dimension in 1931, and Tolman in 1934, and Bondi got into this in 1946. It's really the Dimension Tolman line. Bondi produced a lot of additional results from the model. So, something like 19 years ago, 20 years ago, I started producing a phenomenological model of cosmology based on the void. And I think, as far as I know, I was the first to publish this in 1992. It's a phenomenological model of cosmology based on the void. Now, as we'll see, when I calculated the distance modulus of 94, 95, they suggested an apparent acceleration of expansion of the universe as inferred by an observer in the FRI published paper. So indeed, 4 years before the celebrated supernova data observations, it was clear that if the inhomogeneous void scenario is correct, then the observed dimming of the supernova light was to be expected.
So, John, but you could have had that exact other, you could have lived in an overdensity. So, there was no observational empirical reason to just consider void.
I should say, if the void was correct, subject to the fact that you have to have, in order to determine the distance, luminosity, which is pure electromagnetic, comes from visible light. You have to know the magnetic density profile. So assuming a magnetic profile, I'll show you this if you want, then you get the fact that you have to do. Now, for the device solution demands that the observer be situated close to the center of the void in order to contain the observed by such a portal elastic structure in the universe. Or otherwise, also otherwise, you pick up a large anisotropy due to the motion with respect to the cylindrical dipole. The dipole gets too large, dipole contribution gets too large, so you have to sit within 1% of the center of the void. This violates what's called the cosmological Copernican principle, where a special is placed spatially in the universe. This has been investigated recently by the astronomers, who attempted to see whether it's possible to experiment and prove that the Copernican principle is satisfied in nature. It turns out this is not easy. We'll get into details in a minute. However, if you have a dark energy such as vacuum energy in the cold dark matter model, it also suffers anti-Copernican principle function in coordinate time. The negative pressure dark energy in the associated acceleration expansion of the universe began dominating the evolution of this dynamo model when life first appeared on our planet. This is referred to as the coincidence problem. So we're faced with having to make a choice between two theoretical evils. The dark energy scenario and the more conservative inhomogeneous void scenario. So it's interesting that two of the worked on models that explain the data, current data, suffer from this problem. And it means to me that something's badly wrong with the whole thing. But that's again a matter of opinion. We don't want to get into philosophy or religious connotations involved and such. Well, there it is. If you plot growth versus time, then the matter goes like 1 over t squared, lambda of course is constant, the energy is constant, and when they cross is when the sun was formed, the solar system was formed, and this is the Earth we're here now, so we have creatures running around at the time when this becomes a dominant part of the nature. So, back to the issue of the cosmological constant and the vacuum density, and I've already discussed this function problem, and also the issue of the Higgs particle and the vacuum density, etc. So, whenever we turn on gravity, which keeps me on the floor, you're faced with the most difficult vector problem in modern physics. And something is weirdly wrong with the whole physics. I've spent several years trying to understand this problem. And I can do that because I'm wearing my bridge instrument. I'm looking for a job. And it's just frustrating. And leads nowhere. Now, the situation gets even murkier. I spend a lot of my life trying to get rid of dark matter. And so I have a modified gravity theory called MOG. And I published a lot of papers on this. And I can say that MOG seems to work up to the point where I've been able to apply it to much many pieces of data as published in my papers. Including galaxy rotation curves, the solar system, the works in the solar system, and cosmology, etc. However, this is not the subject of this talk. So I'm going to switch sides. Because I'm going to switch sides and say, cold dark matter exists. However, what about the dark energy? This is going to be the subject of this talk. And I'm going to say that there is no dark energy potential, and there is no lambda. Lambda is zero, for reasons I can't explain. And Einstein's gravity theory does everything. So there's a squishy size for me. Okay? It seems flat. Now, if you have a void model, as I understood many years ago, the void expands, the space-time in the void expands faster than its more dense surrounding galaxies. So a younger supernova inside the void would be observed to be receding more rapidly than expected as compared to older supernova outside. So if the model works, it means that you have the void embedded in an Einstein-specific universe, for example, and the void plus the global embedding decelerating. The acceleration is only an illusion because you're seeing the light coming from galaxies and supernova coming through this void.
What do you mean? What's an Einstein de Sitter universe?
It's a universe of omega so that matter is equal to one. So it's the object we'll get to that. Omega sub n equals 1. It's not, omega sub n is not 0.3, and the dark energy contribution from vacuum energy of 0.7. The simplest, unfortunately.
So it's a spatially flat, you know, it's a spatial, a k equals 0 universe? Is that
yes.
What it means?
Flat. This is the beautiful model of cosmology. And nature should do this, okay? Because if it did, we would think it was wonderful. I would just join into this thing and say, ah, I love it. But it doesn't. Nature doesn't do this. It gets horribly complicated. I mean, this is why I'm giving this talk. If omega was n was 1, the universe is flat, and it fitted all the data, then I wouldn't be standing here talking.
I think that you would.
I think you would still be standing there even if that were.
He knows me too well. I'm known as a loquacious person. As you may have learned over the years since I joined the institute. My wife thinks so too. Yes. Anyway, so the problem is that inhomogeneity, well, if you take what we're saying is you're supposed to have a background cosmology and you put perturbations on it. And it works fine. This is the basis of the lattice
experiment. Can I ask about this void? Can I ask a question? So the idea is that the supernova look like they're receding faster because they're all in this void that we're roughly in the middle of.
Yep.
And so...
Not all of them. It appears that the universe is starting to decelerate as you go to a redshift greater than 1.7.
Well, that was my question. There should then be some boundary where supernova don't look like they're receding.
That's right.
Has that been seen? I thought
as we all know, a redshift of 0.24 is about a gigaparsec. So we'll go from there up to 1.7, so long we are.
So I thought all the data said they were all receding more and more rapidly.
No,
or appeared to be.
If you look, as you'll see, I'll show the data. If you look at the latest data points, the redshift of 1.7, and it appears that you're going into a decelerating period, but this is still contribution.
Is that true that that would also be compatible with a constant lambda? So lambda CDM model?
Yes. Yep. Lambda CDM standard model works within 1-2 sigma for everything.
But why would that be consistent?
Because you're looking at
the
matter
was dominating. Matter
dominant,
yeah.
Matter was earlier.
I showed the plots before. So, we want to be able to have an averaging. How do you average the cosmology so that you get FRW? What is FRW? LFRW. LFRW is a homogeneous smooth fluid. So how do you get from this stuff here, which is the very late nonlinear structure that's obtained by n-body simulation, down to that? And this is a problem, because it turns out that as you go along these boxes, as you keep going up by factors of 2 from 100 megaparsec, then it's not improving too much. You're going out to gigaparsec, it still isn't smooth background fluid. In fact, I'll be homogeneous fluid. And this is a big problem. So, George Ellis and others for years have been complaining about this, and it's a valid complaint. So, the question is, when you do the smoothing, do you get background plus perturbations, or do you get the background? Now, when you go to the surface of last scattering, 400,000 years after the Big Bang, then it is homogeneous. And you can have an LFRW background, you can have perturbations there, everything works fine. But not late time nonlinear structure.
Well, the computational cynic in me would say, well, one need not draw so much out of that simulation because it was one of these heroic simulations that is done at the verge of the best you can do
and it's not allowing you to do any checking of where that it makes sense. So it could be that you're overestimating the regions of higher density and hugely underestimating the regions of lower density.
Well, the problem is that the dark matter consists of boson particles. So if you do antibody simulations with particles, this would be very complicated. Small dark matter particles. So, however, the dark matter coalesces into galaxies. So we use the count of galaxies as the particles to do the cosmology and the averaging. But there are only 10 to the 10 galaxies within our Hubble sphere. And we still can't get a smooth uniform imaging as if a lot of W background from it. That's what we're seeing.
Shouldn't that thing say a gigaparsec or something? If that says 800H to 1 MPC?
8 to H. I didn't have time to make the superscript. It's H to the minus power minus 1.
Oh, 800H to the minus 1. Oh, okay.
H, the little H is, you know, H is 100 H to the minus 1 megaparsec. Kilometers per megaparsec.
Yeah, fine. I didn't realize it was H to the minus 1.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
I'm going to change it when I get back to my office.
And homogenous ish.
Yeah, isn't that horrible? I'm not responsible for this word. Chris Clapson.
Okay.
I'm not taking it out because it's a quote from him. It's,
okay, fine. All right.
I think it's horrible, but anyway. Please.
So what's N for the simulation?
Sorry, what?
What's N?
This is the millennium simulation, N-body simulation with huge numbers of particles. Galaxy.
It's like 4,000
here.
4,000.
By the way, the volume, it's the volume that counts here. So the depth of these boxes is about 15 megaparsecs.
What are those little green boxes in the... What are those green boxes in the center?
These are zooming up, just to give you a contrast between... It's an animation thing. Now, the problem is that to get to fit the data from seeing, we need a large enough void. And there's a lot of controversy about how large is large. We'll get to that eventually. Now, another problem is the initial conditions of the universe. Because if you use simple inflation, which is one of the photon inflation, then you don't expect to get this kind of large-scale homogeneity with this void, say, between half a gigaparsec and 1 parsec in size. However, this is called a commercial. As to be demonstrated by John McGill recently on this whiteboard, if you use my biometric gravity theory from 2000, from 1998, then you can fit all the data in varying fluctuation, flatness, rising problems, all da-da-da-da-da, using this model. This is another modification of Einstein gravity. So there is an alternative. In that case, you wouldn't have a problem having this inhomogeneity, because the motion towards homogeneity takes on a different one.
Could I point out that you're departing from your desire for conservatism very very strongly by introducing bio. So do you want to modify gravity?
I have also some modified gravity theory.
Oh, I know you do. So I
was going to print the menu for you.
your stated philosophy for this talk was that you were going to leave gravity be and try to get away from modified gravity. But if you have to modify gravity to start with to get your initial condition. You sort of turned the baby out of the bathwater. It was seen.
I apologize for shifting.
Okay.
Let us not do this, okay? So, I'm not going to read it, but it's there. There are multi-hybrid inflation laws which could possibly allow for homogeneous voice systems. So there is a possibility.
Okay.
They're very complicated, lots of parameters. And we have lots of parameters you can fit an elephant to make a steel cow. Now, in homogeneous Friedman equations. So we write the FLRW line on the next way, just for clarity. This is, we all know what this is. And then you can write down the spherical symmetric homogeneous line element given by this, where x and r replace the conformal scale factor being t. These are Einstein's field equations, perfectly fluid. And when you put this to zero, you can solve for x. You get that. Now you consider the bonding line for LTP, spherical symmetric homogeneous universe filled with dust. So I got into this again some years later in these papers, 2005 and 2006. I'm missing a reference to my own paper for a while. And there's many papers, 100 more, it's just overwhelming number of papers in this stuff. So now the line element is given here, f is an arbitrary function, prime means differential respect to r, and you can solve these equations. This was done, for example, by Bill Bonner in London in the 70s. And these are the solutions you get. Closed universe, open universe, and flat universe, s squared equals 1. And for the flat case, the so-called parabolic case, this is the result. Where y is given here, and rho is given in terms of t and y. So you can see immediately that for finite data, when t goes to infinity, the model tends to the flat Einstein decision case. Now the luminosity distance between the observer and the origin of our cornices is given by this. And since r contains the function f, you can get any luminosity distance you want. So you have to assume certain x to get certain margins to get a result, a predicted result. Okay, so you have a null cone. And we only observe down by going down the null cone. Cosmology, that's how you observe cosmological things. So you're restricted to the null cone. And so you have light photons going down this null cone, and they give you the luminosity distance. And then you can solve these equations to get the equation for the time dependence of the photon going down the north pole towards the observer. This is all done in my 1992 paper. It's called European. By the way, as usual, in those years when I did these things, it was not popular. I seem to recollect that the referee for this paper, Physical Humans, was not doing his job because he accepted my paper without a word. Whereas I was busy at that time. As I mentioned, I did one of the first spontaneous violation of race and green, so I got into a lot of trouble. And finally published in Europe, European referees are more benign than the American ones, in my experience.
They also say that cosmologists are much more open-minded than particle physicists.
They are?
Because they publish your paper.
Oh. Well, it was easier to publish out-of-the-box papers than I speak from 19 years ago. And sociologically, it's gotten a lot worse. I think the archives are responsible for this. People not paying attention. In those days, 20 years ago, when I refereed the paper, I would take 3 weeks or a month to do it. This is what we did. Not anymore. That's not my impression. Why am I getting into this? Well, this is not sociology 101. So let's get back to this moment. So, local void, okay. So already in the middle 80s, we saw that there are voids. There are large empty spaces with galaxies and fullness of galaxies around them. So this has been known for a long time. The issue is how big they are. Now, when you do recent SDSS large-scale surveys using known as red galaxies, MIT, da-da-da, then you see these voids. You see lots of them. So they exist out there. Now, what I did in 1995 was, with my student Tarski, was construct this simple model of mass profile, density profile. And A is a constant, and we have two possibilities. In B, depending on the nature of the void, this is the void mass profile versus redshift. And we chose 0.2 to be the value of the best profile at the center of the void. You can use 0.3 or whatever. We did the calculations for different possibilities. So, in 1995, we published this result. And, this is at 9 years is omega m equal to 1, Einstein de Sitter. And this is the curve we got from omega 0.2 going up to omega equal to 1. So it's a void embedded in an Einstein de Sitter universe. And you can see that if you plotted Z versus D, you indeed saw the galaxies, the nearest galaxies, is the one nearest to the observation. So you compare this to today. This is the same plot, Z versus D, and putting in the supernova data. So already then, I had enough problems in my hands with my student, this radical stuff going on. So I privately told people that something was dimming out there, okay? But kept us away from his PhD defense, which he successfully got his PhD from. Because they complained a lot about, they laughed, in fact, at this defense, about the fact that this model violates the Copernican principle. Things that people are not laughing anymore, but now they're worried about it, okay? It's not a subject of work. Okay.
So the red curve is the fit from this model of yours on the right?
Yes.
What's the dash
well,
one?
The dash curve is the lambda CDM, and the red is the fit that I predicted.
The boy.
And then you can't tell the difference within the noise of this data.
So what are the points in the older plot? Where are they coming from?
Well, I'll explain what this means. The point is that you can flip this around.
No, those data points. I mean, the data points, where do they come from?
This data, these are just galaxy data points from really.
What is
the
method?
What
is the method? Is it radio galaxies? Or?
These are just radio galaxies.
How
do
they get the distance? What is the distance measurement?
Well, the redshift distance measurement.
They're using the galaxies like standard candles. They have some correction.
We didn't have supernova data
on the morphology or something.
This was about 5 years, 6 years before recent problems.
Okay. The data on the right, it says it's supernova data.
This is the supernova data today.
Yeah.
This is the difference between then and now. And this is recent out to 2004. And this is being all seen this.
In that fit, how big was the void? In that fit, what were the parameters for the void? Describing the
mass profile was went from 0.2 at the center of the void up to 1.
Okay.
How big questions?
Well, how big?
Avoidance.
Well, I'll get to that in a moment. More coming. This is a nice plot. I like this plot. It shows different models. The green, the steady state model is blue. All of cosmology, history of cosmology is blue. even Hoyle's, Hoyle and Bondi's model, steady state models. Kolmogorov's model is in here. This is a problem because this looks like a good fit. Let's go on. The green curve is an empty universe. So the empty universe quotation is close to the magnitude of the M quotation. You can't tell the difference. Which is this is not often appreciated by people. Okay, so in the standard cosmology, we have this, these well-known statements here. And if we have a flat cosmology, then the luminosities is given by this thing. So the distance modulus is the difference between apparent magnitude and absolute magnitude is given here, the well-known formula. So therefore, DL is given, the luminosity is given in terms of the angular distance, d sub a. So this is again more advertising the fact that how clever I was to predict the supernova. Anyway, now there have been lots of papers fitting the luminosity data. And some people claim that the large enough void would get a better fit than lambda CD. But this is either here or there. Now, in the LTB model, you have two couple parameters, HR and HPR. And if we live in a local LTB void, then in 1995, I published this result, H versus Z. So what happens is that the for the omega, the void model and omega 0.2 are the same as the void. H goes through zero and climbs up. Whereas for omega equal to one, it just stays down here. This is very interesting. Because this is what gives you, as we'll see, this is what gives you a beginning of the supernova. So, this is an exact formula for the luminosity distance. And this is the usual expression for the deceleration parameter. And you can see that when H naught is small, gets smaller, DL gets larger, and some fixed value of the deceleration parameter. And that's what's shown here. It's negative because of positive. Now, there's an age problem with structure formation. It's been around, it comes in terms of cosmology. And as we know, for flat FRW model and other cosmological constants, the preservation of the universe is n equals 0 is given by this expression. And with the now measured value of the Hubble constant, according to the Hubble Space Telescope, this is much too small an age compared to the supposed age of the universe, 14 billion years, according to globular cluster measurements. And if we put in the vacuum density, then we get this result. So we get something like 13.4, 13.7 gigahertz, which is uncomfortably consistent with estimates of the ages of probably places in our galaxy and galaxies outside us. So even though lambda CDM is more comfortable to me, it's uncomfortable because there isn't much give. This result here is close to the observed values of the ages of the Gaussian crystals. Now, in the Y model, things are different because functions depend on R, where you are spatially. This is just not true in the fact that the homogeneous isotropic universe. And the model is only valid for T greater than this value here because there are singularities in the solution. You have to avoid them. So this defines what's called the Big Bang hypersurface in the model. The model is pressureless, so you can't go down below the surface of mass casual to the outer universe. You need radiation, you need pressure to do it. But this is all right because we're mainly concerned about later time data on this talk.
So can you say again why is that you don't like that the age estimate of the Landis VM is close to the ages observed?
Because the age comes out at about 13.4 gigayears, and the estimate of the age of globular clusters is 14 plus or minus whatever, depending on who you are and what. Mm-hmm. It's very close. You have to have time to evolve stars. And globular clusters consist of stars, okay? So the age is tight. This is a matter of opinion. And I have a negative amount of opinion, others may have a positive. However, in the Y model, this surface can be pushed back. So it turns out that in the Y model, the age of the universe is given by this. So when this constant beta log is zero, log means what we have at the center of the galaxy, the center of the point, then you get back the Einstein de Sitter result, which of course is wrong. But beta naught is a constant that has to be determined by the models, and it can be larger so that you can get a larger age of the universe, consistent with the globular cluster data. So now we turn to the perturbations, density contrast, and I'm using a spatially flat model to describe this. This was already done when published in my physical year deep paper in 1992. And incidentally, I think this is going on with that. This is a plot of Hubble rate versus HZ closed receiver megaparsec. This is the Hubble rate, and this is versus Z. This is the data, the ages of probably the clusters or whatever, radioactive processes on Earth and all that stuff.
And I don't understand where that data comes from.
It comes from this paper, if you look it up, because I haven't included it. So this is clearly not working. This is Einstein's decision prediction. These are the red and the blue curves are different solutions for void, choosing the mass profile for the void. And this is Landesian.
So what am I looking at? That's redshift on the bottom, and that's the Hubble parameter as a function of redshift?
Yes, it's the Hubble because the Hubble parameter is not a constant. Because it depends on where you are in the universe.
So it's within the context of LTB.
Yes.
John, you have five different lines corresponding to different voids. I mean, is it that it's not very sensitive from the size of the void, or you haven't changed things much in the void?
Well, the problem with getting more complicated ways of describing nation is that you get into more complicated situations. And so this is one potential model description.
Right, now what I'm trying to understand is...
And I agree, it's not... It's different to a 0.2 and 0.3.
Okay. I have a question. I didn't understand the conclusion of the age problem. Is it that you do about as well as lambda CDM, or it's more comfortable, or it's less comfortable, or what was
the story? Depending on the model, you're as well as lambda CDM if you can do better. Now, the this is the autocorrelation function, and it's defined in the usual way. So if you're an observer close to the center of the void, then it's just isotropic. So the density perturbations for the Gordian mode in LFR dot beta is well known for me here. And this is the time in LFRW, so as time increases, you get this amplification factor. In the isotropic flat inhomogeneous model, you get this result. And the TL to B is now the L to B time. And if we make this a simple assumption here, this is the time for the initial singularity. And then we find this result from the that's an amplification of the LFRW mode. This amplification can be significant. So this has also has bearing on dark matter. One of the reasons, one of the virtues of dark matter is that the gravitational potential values are deeper than they would be in pyrenos. This slows the growth structure in the CDR model, which is what you need to fill the data. In the homogeneous model, you also have a slowing of things take longer. This can go back depending on the size of things that values here. Similarly for the correlation function. Also, it affects the late time integrated circuit loop effect as compared to the Lyman standard analysis, because in late time, ISW is when you integrate over gradients of the potential, gravitational potential. So what you do is you construct gravitational potentials for the L to B model, take gradients, do your integral over the volume, and you can find that you get a bigger value for this result in the original. There's a problem with the Concordance model, with the late time ISW. We'll get back to that. Can the void model agree with cosmological? How am I doing for time here?
3 o'clock.
So we started what, about 5 minutes, 7 minutes?
10 minutes.
So I have to move faster. So these are all recent papers discussing whether you can agree with cosmological data. And the void model must fit the data, it must compete with the lambda CD. Otherwise, again, it's got to work. And the particular has to fit these pieces of data. This is not trivial. Also, it has to fit the kinematic soundness of those measurements. David, I think, was just here the other day discussing this. And we can potentially explain and avoid on some serious discrepancies, which I'll get to in a moment.
David says that the KSZ effect was not explained by L2P.
I will get to that in a moment.
All right.
Okay, now this is the work of Hunt and Sarkar. These are two dissidents, okay, in Boston. And they have a long, interesting paper checking their horses to take them with LTP models. And they get excellent fits to all the CMP data, provided they have 10% hot neutrinos with the mass of between the mass of 0.5 electron volts, which is well within the bounds in the neutrino mass, which is 2 electron volts. So 0.5, less than 0.5, talking about 5. So, however, to get this result, they can't fit the data with a standard power law primordial fluctuation curve, power spectrum. Power spectrum, primordial power spectrum has to have a bump This introduces two new parameters. And it turns out there's no way of excluding this at present. So you have two more parameters as well. Life is not easy. But given that data, this is the magnetic power spectrum, everything fits.
CHDM is cold hot.
This is cold hot dark matter. Okay, David. Well, I checked his paper as much as I could. And, the problem is that you have to be careful because these are very model dependent statements. And his claim is that Sonyaev subdome, which is photons going through gas clusters, galaxies, and from this you can obtain the velocity of the cluster. And he claims that you get something like 1 or 2,000 kilometers per second, and the lambda CDM model gets 200 kilometers per second.
This is the peculiar velocity of particular clusters?
Yes.
This lambda CDM makes no prediction. It makes a prediction of the mean velocity of clusters.
That's right. It's a variance.
So how many
this is the data from Benson et al. And this is awful data. The reason is that you're going out to large values of set. And when you look through a telescope, the clusters are not smudge. So you have to determine the distance. It's not easy to determine the distance. They're very far away. I mean, 0.2, being said, is about a gigaparsec, so you go up as much as this size. So, I want to do this, I want to do this calculation myself. I know how to do it. It's just a matter of time. Check it. I'm a bit suspicious about it. Well, this is interesting. This is the data of Kashwinsky et al. And Richard Watkins et al. What's going to be the Hudson? And Mike Hudson over there.
This is Mike Hudson. This is not Mike Hudson. This is not Mike Hudson. This is all Mike Hudson's
people. Well, Watkins, supposedly Hudson, is it, I presume it's the same Hudson.
Yep, and they have
a No, this is not that data. This is the data of Kashwinsky, which is quite recent. So, the point is that now we're much smaller values than Z. Okay? So the data is becoming more significant. And this result differs by factors of 3 to 5 compared to what I see here in the case. So it's
worth saying that this is different from the previous.
This is different.
No, I mean it's qualitatively different. These are not the velocities of particular clusters.
This is a different thing. So this has been discussed by Ghazal and Yerish. Ghazal talked about this in Fort Lauderdale last year. My ears picked up. This is interesting. So, this, I don't think this is going to go away. There's something wrong with the lambda CDM model. Finally, something that we can get our teeth into.
Well, there's already a claim that it went away. There's a claim that it went away already.
Who said?
Someone we get online for it.
Well, yeah.
What is this plot? What is the vertical axis?
The vertical axis is the bulk velocity of a cluster in kilometers per second.
This is Z times C times
H naught to the minus 1 in megaparsecs.
So it's the average velocity of the sphere centered around if you do a top hat weighting of all of the stuff within the sphere of that size, what's its velocity? So dipole.
Now, finally,
what are those colors? But can you go back? So, what are those colored rectangles? That's what the lambda CDM produces.
This is lambda CDM in the shaded area which is a 95% coverage length.
And the colored squares are what? Data bounds or something?
This is top hat Gaussian with Windows data. It's the best you can do. It's a various averaging method of complicated computing model for interpreting data.
But this means the actual curve lies within one of those.
Yeah, if you draw a curve, you want to, then it's way above what the magistrate model predicts. There's a paper
is
by.
Is there only one signal?
There's a paper by Wetterich. Christoph Wetterich from the archives. And he takes this seriously and he has a phenomenological model using modified gravity which can fit this data and achieve the KT variance. And this, I've used my model to fit what he did, and my model can explain this data, my modified gravity. And that's switching sides again.
I'll let you keep going.
So, in terms of exactly homogeneous solutions, there exist other exact solutions. And something called spherical symmetric Stephanie solutions without compression and density. These exact solutions of Einstein's equations. And then there's the Schechner solutions. And these solutions have no special symmetry. So it's possible if you use these solutions, you can avoid the violating the Copernican principle. So, I put out this paper in 2006, where I used what's called the Schaffner model, and a sub-solution of the Schaffner model is cylindrical symmetry, and it turned out that inflation could be non-uniform, and this could explain hotspots, alignment of multiple numbers, a small L in the correlation functions, and other stuff. So this is an interesting model to investigate. I haven't submitted it for publication, so I was too busy. I didn't bother. It's only after. So it's not that it's been rejected. Okay.
Do these also have free functions in them? Or?
Yes.
One free function? Or two?
At least a couple. Yes. So, do we really need dark energy? This is the conclusion.
So you never said how big your void was. You never said how big your void was.
Oh, okay. The best fit to these supernova data needs a void between 0.5 and 1 gigahertz.
So what's at the philosophical level, what's the difference between choosing the size of the void that makes the data, makes the agreement with the data, or this criticism to lambda CDN that it just picks up when life is on an Earth? Will this be at exactly the same level?
Well, you can't tell the difference between these fits and supernova data and the standard lambda CDN on any of the data, except the ones that I'm criticizing from the machine. Namely the Sanyo Saltoni stuff. The supernova data isn't good enough yet to really distinguish one. This is a frustrating business. By the way, I didn't mention the fact that if you want to get into distinguishing between these void models and the standard model, you really want to determine the equation state, WZ. But it turns out to do that, it's very sensitive to distance. And even second derivatives of the distance come into the formulas for WZ. And it's almost impossible to see how you can determine what WZ is to the accuracy needed within the next 10 or 20 years. It's quite complicated. This violates the Copernican principle of space. Can the void be large enough? These are questions. Can fit the WMAP data with H.5 and that equals it. By the way, the fact that, that h is 0.5 and not, this is little h, this means that capital H is about 50 kilometers per second per second. The point is that the H is small, is bigger near the center. So things look younger in the moon dust if you're sitting observing it, because we're sitting next to it. Compared to outside the void, because H depends on R. So out there, H can be smaller. So this is not a problem.
So what happens if you take H to be or H to be 0.7? Can you print the data? Is it equal to 0?
Sorry, what?
Okay. To find this best fit, like you took H equal to 0.5.
Yeah. This is Subar, and this is Saka and Hunt, and Stefan Alexander, his wife, two others.
Okay, but suppose I want to take H equal to 0.7, and I want to find the best fit for lambda, best fit value of lambda, what is it?
You mean lambda CDM?
This is within the
web, I have no idea. But there are also the free fitting of things here too, right? Because you can't have a power law.
No.
So they're free fitting of the things, so you can't ask that question so simple.
But I thought like he's already fixing omega.
Yeah. So they're setting the shape of the power spectrum. So presumably they're to move that over. My guess would be that the Fed would be very bad at you. The usual answer in these things is that you have to tune down to very small, basically to put the physical kingdom in.
For lambda CDM, little h is 0.71 plus or minus. And however, lambda CDM, h is a constant everywhere in the universe. There's no spatial dependence. In LTP, there is a spatial dependence. So you have to be careful what you mean by big H. So this is okay. Anyway, yes, mine is because of the time. We need dark energy. We can't detect dark energy. Possibly we can never detect dark energy, which is a unfortunate thing. We can fine tune the cosmological constant angle, potential problem, the cluster velocity. However, it does fit the theory of W mark data and the H constant. And it works very well to fit the theory. So, my conclusion is, that after 18, 19 years, things have gotten worse, okay? I'm not able to distinguish these models. And we're not in a position to say that any particular model is correct. I've ignored numerous models, the presence, Capodachi, Moratti models, high dimensional models, all sorts of models. Everybody has a model to fit the supernova data in order to avoid dark energy and rock. And the whole thing is kind of in confusion. I was at the Invisible Universe Conference in Paris, June. And 500 cosmologists and physicists, there was an enormous conference at UNESCO building. And I came away completely confused and bewildered. Everybody was disagreeing with everybody else. So we're in a chaotic state in cosmology, in my opinion. And we have a lot to learn. I think we're the dark ages of cosmology. So people have every cycle going in all directions, and too many parameters, and too many models. And that's it. Thank you.
Any questions?
Can one make a kind of distribution curve of the number of voids of different sizes and say how likely it would, if you just sort of extrapolate that from, how likely would it be to find a void of the size that you need?
Good question. There's a lot of calculations in the papers probability of seeing, detecting, having a bond, usage of distance. And they come out to avoid of something like half a gigaparsec, the probability is 10 to the power minus 60.
60?
Yeah. 60 or 60? 60. Some of them is 10 to the power minus 247. No. Before you get carried away, if you do the same analysis for voids that are observed using the same techniques, you get something like 10 to the power minus 40. That it doesn't exist. But it's there. So these probability distribution calculations are not reliable. Ignore it.
Who wants to say that about the cosmological?
Back to the cosmological consciousness.
No, I'm just saying that if you just get a big number that seems crazy, you just say ignore it. That's been the standard answer.
Well, you can't ignore the cosmological consciousness problem.
But are you saying there's one particular one that's an outlier among all? I don't understand. You just said.
The point is that
they predicted that it couldn't be there based on
the statistical analysis. But if you, from STS, from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey data, for dominant luminous red galaxies, you see voids. I'll show you pictures of them. And if you do that analysis for one void that's seen, it has a very low probability of existing.
Just one void?
No, several of them.
But then you have to use a different group. I don't understand.
Some of them. Some of them are less probable than others.
But if they're there, how can you say they're not probable? I mean, that's it. You're just talking about an empirical fit to the density of voids.
Yeah.
So you have to adjust the fit, obviously, if those voids are there. And if you adjust it that way, what would be the problem?
It's fair to say, too, that the LRGs, voids defined by LRGs may not be. Defining voids is actually a whole.
Matching
up what you see in a simulation to visible voids is a very good question. On all scales.
I mean, it's another way of saying this is if you try to reconstruct the primordial power spectrum just using large scale structure, you get something that doesn't look like the middle scale is very even on large scales.
You don't have enough data to say anything statistically. Okay. You try to use voids to do it. It's hard. People do try to do the just straight void measurements of the power spectrum, but it's very contentious.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about what would motivate this bump that people super start
there. I'd be curious.
Top left.
They claim that.
If you read this paper here in the archive, it's published in MNRES, then they give calculations of these distributions. I haven't had time to go into the details.
So, does it mean there's no simple way to characterize by a few parameters what we actually see now?
In terms of matter density?
If there was a model, if there was some stochastic model of what's the probability of a given mass distribution, then you could
ask. You have to do the whole set of calculations and from the phenomenon.
You have to go back and. That's what I meant. So there's nothing for the present. There's no simple.
This model is the most conservative explanation.
You
don't have dark energy, there's no lambda, you don't have to worry about it. And you keep Einstein's field equations.
That is a definition of conservatism.
Not all of us would agree with
it. Not everyone will sign on to it. Because you introduced at various points, so I'm sure you'll disavow them one at a time. free parameters, free functions. And of the early universe, we did not speak. Of course, because you said that you had to change sides to get to go to VSL, biometric gravity, to get the right primordial power. So, it is true that as a latent universe phenomenon, you might there is a point of view that says that this is a good model for that. But cosmology is no longer just a latent universe study anymore. You have to match the early universe too. So when you do that, this looks just it starts looking broke too.
I disagree.
I say that many would disagree with her.
Yeah, many disagree with many people.
But that is not a good argument. Just because you say that everyone disagrees, therefore there's not a good argument.
No, I don't think it's a good argument. It's just a fact.
That's your message.
Listen, I can give a talk next week using my modified gravity theory, and I can fit the cosmological data, I can fit the supernova data, but I've modified Einstein's field equation. That's another talk. And I wear another uniform. This is how confusing the subject is. This is the point of my giving this talk.
No, I agree. I agree that the subject is confusing.
So another question. At what point would we be able to just look and see if there is a void or not? Just directly.
We see voids.
Well, no.
Sorry, what?
So I'm dense. My initial impulse would be, oh, are we in a void or not? Just
well, I see what you
said. You said it's far away or something. Yeah, so at what point would we
be able to see? So what you're asking is whether we can empirically determine whether the Copernican principle is valid.
No, I just want to know if we're living in a void.
The only way that we now begin to see this possibility of doing this, whether we're living in a void, is to use the geomagnetic Sonnier-Sotovich effect. Because you are able to tell what's happening somewhere else in the universe besides what's happening here on Earth. And this is the problem. If I could take a spaceship a gigaparsec away from me, I can start doing all my cosmology measurements. And I will tell you whether it's LFRW or whether it's an LTP or whatever. But I'm not able to do that. Old as I am, I'm not going to get that old.
So what we really need is a radio transmission from very distant alien civilizations. They're measuring the cosmological frameworks communities.
We need to communicate with someone else in the universe.
There have been some suggestions. I don't know what's the state of the art. Like, what was the, for using parallax in one of these space missions, and one of us. Another one was Kamikovsky suggesting that so you'd be measured to see the primordial scene be reflected from another cluster of galaxies and get polarization of that.
Now, you've worked with this kinematic Sonnier-Sotovich business.
Yeah,
and
then.
I would say, John, in your paper, so that you should look at the Hudson, the actual Hudson wants to install it. It's a little firmer than the. It's not as drastic as the Hudson's, but it's a better.
I've read studies of it. They agree with the cost pressures.
They agree on the one
they
part
agree
of
the
where they agree.
The issue that there's something wrong. Since then,
but they were looking on a much smaller distance.
Much smaller, which makes life easier and the data better. The Benson et al. Data for Garfinkel. By the way, if you look at that, this is one sigma.
Yeah, let me ask
one sigma away. This is useless.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. That's all.
David.
Cosmology 2003 might as well be 1975.
Well, the
data is probably increased quadrupled.
No, I haven't been. Do you know of any more recent data on this? This is all that I could find. I did a search.
No, I mean, people haven't done this plot, but there's a much, much better data
redshifts.
I guess.
Well, if you can find it, I want to see it.
I know, yeah. All right, well, if I see it. No, I don't think the people have done this analysis again. The data to do it probably exists.
So, it's happening here.
Thanks.